is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Avin Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. And we go to the border, not just the border with Mexico, but also the border with the United Kingdom and continental Europe, the border with Greece and Turkey, the border with Italy and the Sahel. All the borders now under extreme stress because of migration. What migration and where? In particular, I read in a new column from Ayan Hirsi Ali of the Hoover Institution, this comparison of the British government, the conservatives in power 13 years now led by Rishi Sunak, and the present American administration, Mr. Biden and Ms. Harris. Ms. Hirsi writes, in the coming weeks, it is not inconceivable that Britain and America's immigration crises will be framed as polar opposites. On one side of the Atlantic, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will assure voters that the immigration crisis is over. On the other side, Rishi Sunak and his Secretary of Homeland, Suella Braverman, will try to convince voters that their glossy new policies will make sure it is over soon. But for all the optics, writes Ms. Hirsi, the truth is that both sets of leaders find themselves in a similar situation. With an election year coming, they each sit proudly atop two creaking immigration systems that they are unable to fix, but will have to defend against a fired-up opposition. Perhaps then it will finally become clear that everything isn't going smoothly. There is the irony. We have two countries, special relationship, both speaking English, and both going in different directions for policies. What explains this odd combination? I turn to the professor to mention that in my reading of these last months, particularly a new book, Nomad Century, from Gaia Vince, who's an English correspondent for the BBC, I learned that global migration is a problem for everyone maintaining security on their borders. And generally speaking, according to Gaia Vince and others I've spoken with in London, this is their opinion, this is the global south moving to the global north, sometimes for climate, sometimes because of violence and food security, often because there's a march and you join the march that we see in Central America. Professor, you have served in an administration and you're now serving the U.S. Army War College, advising SOUTHCOM and other important parts of the defense mechanism about this migration story, not only here in the United States, but in CENTCOM, in NORTHCOM, around the globe. What is the understanding of this stress along the borders of our allies and our foes? Is it something that the military or the State Department are dealing with holistically, not just let's go to El Paso?
Well, John, you make a good point, and it's the point for not only migration, but also a broader set of issues that, one deals with the crisis, the moment, the tactical, if you will. One tries to deal with some of the broader issues, and then one tries to look at some of the even broader long-term strategic movements. So when you talk about migration flows, as you alluded to, we have, again, for example, in the case of the end of Title 42 at the U.S. border and the replacement with Title 8 and the questions of the adequacy of the immigration system and current laws. You have the crisis of the moment, but then more broadly, the question of, what are the specific things, natural disasters, policies of different governments that have led to the violence that has led to that immigration. And then you have even broader questions of, are there, tectonic shifts in terms of what parts of the planet are livable or not that goes back to your book that you cited, Nomad Century, about migration. But a couple things. Number one is recognizing that the border crisis, so to speak, even in Latin America, you find that replicated throughout. The Dominican Republic and the question of their border with Haiti, Colombians and the Guyanese and the Caribbean states that border Venezuela and the question of what is occurring there, the question of what is occurring in the neighbors of Cuba and in the Caribbean and elsewhere. Chile, for many years, had to deal with the significant immigration influx of Peruvians and Bolivians who were coming from, again, countries which were often less prosperous. And as you alluded to, it's not a Latin American phenomenon alone, because with the crisis in Syria and other issues, you've had the migration across the English Channel, you've had the migration into Europe, which has really led to political consequences, questioning not only immigration policies, but the rise of right-wing parties over the past 20 or 30 years in what was once a relatively migration-tolerant Europe, but became less migration-tolerant when that migration began to transform those states. So there are certainly these broader issues of climate, of insecurity that guide migration, but important to recognize that migration itself has important political consequences on the countries involved, and the question of how does one manage and recognize the bigger picture as well as the crisis of the moment.
I want to give an example of the specifics of the border programs that are now in place and how they do not answer this geopolitical friction that's around the globe. A young Chinese family traveling from the mainland, and I'm not sure how they reached the Darien Gap, but they did arrive at the Darien Gap and pass through 60 miles of very dangerous triple canopy jungle, then emerge at the end of the Pan-American Highway, where the Center Front, that's the Panamanian security, border security, and other NGOs, including the International Red Cross, have set up receiving stations, and everything has improved much in the last year. This young Chinese family, with smattering of good English, are met by a journalist whom I spoke with. And the journalist engages them as to where they've come from and where they're going. And the family is agreeable and speaks at length. And at the end, the journalist gets their phone number or some way to contact them afterwards to find out how they did going from Darien through the Central American states necessary to reach the American border. Some weeks later, this journalist gets a call in the middle of the night, and he picks it up because it might be an emergency. He's no longer in Darien Gap, he's somewhere else. It's the Border Patrol calling him saying, "Are you?" And then they ask his name. "And are you sponsoring this family?" And they give the name of the Chinese family. That is the policy. If you have a sponsor in America and you're seeking sanctuary, you just need to have that sponsored, identified by the Border Patrol, and you pass through the processing center onto America. You get a hearing, and the estimate is it can be more than 4 years before your hearing comes up about whether you're a refugee or not. Now, Evan, I give that long example because that's the policy that's now in place. It seems especially humanitarian on the part of everyone, but clearly it doesn't work at scale.
Well, John, you certainly raise a number of very important points understanding these very complex global migration dynamics. One of them certainly is that in the specifics, when we talk about places like the Darien Gap, it's not just immigrants from South America, but it's increasingly those coming in from Cuba, Venezuela, as we've seen, and increasingly a portion of the Chinese immigrants are coming through that as well. Something that Center Front, the National Panamanian Border Authorities, recognizes is a flow that's jumped significantly. But number two, just understanding the broader way in which individual country migration policies, whether one grants a visa or not, what countries have to have visas, the ability to then go from that country to a different country, impacts the often circuitous ways that some migrants try to come. So there are many migrants for some time were coming from Africa and other places, also in the Caribbean, to Chile, because it was relatively easy to get into Chile, and then from Chile, the ability to obtain one's papers, then to come back north. And so you find these incredibly elaborate routes which have to do with what countries are offering visa policies or not. And then the other issue that you raised specific to the United States is the question of the current U.S. requirements, whether applying for economic asylum or whether applying for other things. And that often requires relationships that those coming may not have, and one may strain to identify, you know, who will sponsor them, depending on the type of visa or entry requirement or others. And as many have talked about in the United States, the combination of the requirements and the judicial backlog and other things make that border system fundamentally broken, both for the ability to reasonably process asylum claims and other claims, but also for the people who are going through the system. You mentioned approximately a 4.5 year backlog, depending on what type of cases. And so these broader issues certainly create crises for individuals at the moment. And we see it right now in the United States, but also in Europe and in Great Britain, as you mentioned, that the governments are struggling to keep up with, essentially human beings desperate for economic opportunity, desperate to escape violence, looking for whatever path seems viable to getting them to a better place in some part of the world in their time of need.
Professor Avenelis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Going to Columbia, I'm John Batchelor.